ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
How are your people skills? It's a common complaint that leaders and managers aren't always very good at that part of their job, but there might be some good reasons why.
More than 60% of first-time leaders don't get any kind of formal support or training or anything like that. And about 85% of first-time leaders feel very uncertain, anxious, stressed, and sort of lacking in confidence because they don't feel that support around them.
I see a lot of first-time managers have negative self-talk or imposter syndrome.
They don't know what they don't know. I was influenced by a culture where leadership is about strategy and your ideas and what you contribute. It was later in my career that I learned that leadership's more about facilitating the growth and development of others and their capability.
If you've ever stepped up from being part of a team to managing one, listen up. I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, what helps a first-time manager on their way to becoming a great leader?
I'm Stacey Ashley, or Dr. Stacey Ashley, and my title is, I'll call it Leadership Visionary. I think there's the assumption that people absorb leadership skills, so when they get promoted into a first-time leadership or even a next leadership role, that they suddenly just have these skills, and so there's not enough conscious moves being made to support people, and all the research bears this out.
Now, you work with executive and CEO leaders as well. Do you see a gap in their basic management skill set?
I certainly do sometimes, and I wrote my first book, The New Leader, really for people making the transition from being a member of a team to leading a team. But what I find is that when I'm working with some senior leaders, that those core foundational skills are actually missing. And so it's making their leadership roles harder, even at the most senior sort of C-suite roles. And we have to fill in those gaps because without them, it's very hard to be operating at your best if you haven't got the foundations nice and solid to set you up.
Okay, so that might explain why staff can feel like their manager or team leader isn't really suited for the job. But what if you're not even interested in leadership? Can you still carve out a viable career? Karina Calder is Head of Learning and Development at SW Accountants and Advisors, where other kinds of expertise are highly valued.
There are definitely career pathways for technical experts, so people who want to be a centre of excellence, a subject matter expert, or a technical expert. People tend to be good at their roles, and then they end up with other people who want to learn from them, and they end up leading a team. Now, not everyone has the aspiration to be a leader or the capability to do that. Some people just don't want the responsibility, or they're quite content being that technical expert.
And for, say, subject matter experts, are they developed in a different way then?
So for every individual, it's sitting down with them and asking, what does career development mean for them? And for them, it might be becoming more of a technical expert, subject matter expertise, or centre of excellence. And how can they develop? How can they continue to add value in the role that they have within an organisation or to their clients?
In some industries, like professional services, you can stay technical and not have to go into leadership. But in others, the only way up the ladder is to start managing people. Could this be part of the reason why some managers aren't good at the people part?
Certainly in some organisations, it's really mapped out. It's very clear. You can take a career trajectory, which is about bigger teams and leading people and that sort of thing, or you can take a career trajectory, which is about the contribution that you make in your domain expertise, and you become, you know, a leader that sort of area of domain. That happens in some organisations, but I would say in my experience, kind of not enough. And I think that to make it viable, we need to actually be really proactive and disciplined, really, in terms of making that a priority. You know, we want to keep our great people. We don't want to force them to do things that they don't perhaps have a real desire to do, but they can make amazing contributions using their expertise. So let's actually really be deliberate about creating career paths that support all those different career trajectories.
Wouldn't it be good if organisations could still promote you and pay you more for staying on the tools? But what if that's not an option and you do decide to step into a people-leading role? Meet Greg Harper. He's a professor and executive dean of business at Torrens University.
Clearly, there are good managers who've learned a lot about management and developed great expertise. Can anyone improve? I think everybody can improve. Can everybody become really proficient and high-level expertise in management? Probably not. But I think people who perhaps are very good at technical things don't want to focus on developing really strong interpersonal skills. Perhaps some people I do know are like that. One of the things that I have learned is that we tend to get good at the things we are interested in. So if you're very interested and motivated to develop those skills, they certainly can be developed.
So passion for management is a key to helping you be good at it. But what else gets in the way of developing good leadership?
So where I see some leaders struggle with leadership is particularly in an emotional intelligence. So if they don't have good self-awareness of their own personality traits, of their own strengths and development areas, or they don't have the desire to grow as well, or the care for their team.
Building self-awareness is an important step along the way to becoming a good manager.
There are a number of dimensions of leadership, and leading yourself, I believe, comes first. You know, how do I show up each day? How do I contribute each day? How do I present? How do I, relate to other people? That's all about me. And if I can't show up in a way which is, constructive and helpful and making a difference, why would people choose to follow me? So I think that it starts with self-leadership, and then, of course, we expand from there into how we work with others and how we contribute to the organisation.
One of the core pillars is that self-awareness, so awareness of your own personality preferences, your own thinking styles, what your strengths and your development areas are. So there's always a piece in every leadership development program where you obtain feedback from the people that you work with, and that self-awareness around what you're good at, but we should also develop as well. And you can do that through personality profiling and understanding what your own preferences are. Then there is self-leadership, so managing yourself, managing your own time, your own priorities, goal setting, how you motivate yourself and how you sustain your own leadership, so that well-being and resilience as well. So that's kind of self-leadership, and then we get them to look outward at those interpersonal skills, so how they interact with their team, how they lead their team, delegate, change behaviour through giving feedback, adapt to others, leverage that team diversity, how they manage conflict, how they influence others and bring people along on that journey.
Emotional intelligence is really important for first-time leaders to focus on.
Emotional self-awareness, awareness of emotions in other people, how people's reactions to things. They're foundational skills, and we learn them through our families. We learn them when we're young, and they continue to develop throughout life as we mature. Active listening, and that's a sort of core skill of coaching in some respects. Coaching's a skill of asking questions based on active listening. And then there are more sophisticated skills, conflict resolution, difficult conversations. There's literally probably hundreds of skills that can be developed, persuasion, influence, all of those sorts of skills.
Dr. Stacey Ashley agrees there are hundreds of skills that first-time leaders can work on developing. Here's some to get you started.
Really basic ones. I shouldn't say basic, they're very important, but almost what I would call hygiene skills. So the ability to organise yourself very well so that you focus on the right things and do them in the right way, so efficiently and effectively at the right time. Being able to manage your calendar, being able to build really strong relationships, being able to have really important conversations, whether it's about feedback or performance or simply a conversation with your leader to talk about the expectations you have of each other. Being open to learning, I think, is the first thing, and recognising that as a first-time leader, we don't know everything, so really be a sponge, kind of soak up all of the good stuff from the people around you. But those simple things, you know, be responsive to email, get organised, or whether you use, you know, instant messaging or however you communicate, but be responsive, be proactive, develop your skills in terms of how you interact with other people. And if you don't know everything or you feel like there's room for improvement, then learn. You know, there's lots of opportunities for different pathways to learning. Make sure that you have the important conversations with your leader so that you understand what is expected of you, and then you can translate that into, okay, so what does that mean I do each and every day? So it really is just getting those foundations nice and firm, because then you can build into the more developed and strategic thinking and decision making and, you know, visioning and all of the things that we want from our leaders over time. But if we don't have that platform of just nice clarity about what I'm going to focus on, how I'm going to focus on it, then we don't have the space to lead. And so for early leaders, I would say, yeah, focus on yourself, get organised, get clear about what the expectations are, and make sure that you're learning the right kind of things to fill in any gaps that you already have identified.
Ooh, so there's lots to learn, but how? More on that in a tick. Professor Greg Harper has been trying to figure out what good leadership development at work should look like.
The paper is a framework for building programs that develop leadership capability, leadership and management capability in the workplace. So it's a framework, so it's guidelines for design of programs.
And really the context is that many of us might have experienced a bad leadership course or a course that wasn't very practical. So what are the five ingredients of a good leadership course then?
Well, first up, I've been to compulsory leadership development programs in workplaces, the two-day sheep dip that everybody does, and they don't work because, well, it's not aligned to what individuals' needs are, and often there's people on the program who aren't motivated to be there. I've facilitated running some coaching programs for a time, two-day workshops, and you'd get people who were sort of nominated by their boss to come and do the coaching program because they needed it, but they had no ownership of it. And the people who needed it most often would say they didn't need it at all. So what's the point? But related to that is sort of organisational culture of continuous learning. So, and the environment is very much about learning, and there's an openness and there's safety to express views and so on. Then it's a positive learning culture, and that continuous learning culture can motivate people to learn as well, right?
And Greg, when you mentioned the sheep dip approach to leadership, how does that differ from this idea of cultivating a continuous learning mindset then?
It's about the application, which is the other major thing. It's instead of just you go in and, you know, you're half there and go back to work and don't really think about the 2 days other than the lunch you had or whatever, and then don't apply it, well, you're not going to learn anything, are you? So application is a necessary element of any skill development. There is just no skill development without application. So it needs follow through, and that follow through needs to be facilitated. It can be, and ideally it should be facilitated somewhat independently of management, so that the person's got a safe, the person learning the skills has a support that they need. But it's also got to be supported by management by providing opportunities and for learning and application in the workplace.
The leadership development program Karina Calder runs at SW Accountants was recently recognised at the Australian HR Awards. It's run over 10 months. And continuous learning is a big part of its success.
So it's really important when you're learning a skill that you're not just focused on the technical elements of the role or the formal education. So they say that when you learn a skill, there's this 70-20-10 rule. So 10% of it comes from formal education. You could read every management book there is, listen to every podcast, watch every TED talk. But unless you're also getting 20% exposure to people who already are leading, or a network of peers that you've got that social learning from, maybe it's mentors and coaching, or you're getting feedback on how you're doing. And then 70% of that learning really comes from experience. So getting to apply your skills. So when you have a leadership development program over a number of months, you can kick off with some education and then get the leaders who are going through the program to apply those skills, get feedback and progress. And you can watch their progression and assist them and to be much more effective.
And did you break them down into smaller groups for peer coaching?
Absolutely. So when we initially kicked off with this leadership group, we got some feedback in terms of how they would prefer to work. And the overwhelming response was that they wanted to be face-to-face and have that connection, that collaboration, that communication. So we flew them all in. They're nationally dispersed, geographically dispersed. And so it was really important that we have those face-to-face touch points so that they're building those peer networks. Then we broke them down into what we call learning pods or peer support networks so that they could work on live challenges throughout the program and support each other and coach each other.
What are the live challenges? Can you give us an example?
So for example, it could be that they've got a challenging employee within their team, a difficult conversation that they've got to have, or an external stakeholder that they're dealing with. So they would bring that case study along, and in groups of 4 to 5, they would work through that live and give each other advice and coach each other.
And those case studies, so they're real life examples from their own work?
Absolutely, yes. So we have this concept of leaders helping other leaders lead and each other coaching each other about, you know, what they would do in that situation and learning from each other.
What happens after a new leader who goes through that program, so they complete the course? How are they supported once it's done?
Then it becomes much more bespoke in terms of what is their career development that they need, how aligned are they to the business, and what are their aspirations as well. So it becomes an individual discussion with their own leader, and that's also where you can have that much more one-on-one coaching to whatever their needs are.
And how do you know if the training has been effective?
So there's a number of ways that you can measure training effectiveness, from hearing from the participants themselves and getting that initial feedback. But the way that we really look at that is that there is a performance review process at the start, at the middle and the end. So we can see how successful that is and if they're progressing.
That leadership program has a built-in feedback loop. Can you make something similar for yourself as a first-time manager? Here's leadership expert Dr. Stacey Ashley.
Yeah, I think very important. And I think certainly as a leader at any level, but absolutely at this early stage, is to be really going out and getting feedback. And by that, I mean asking specific questions around, so what am I doing well? What else do you need from me as your leader? You know, what would improve my leadership of you or of the team, so that you can get specific information and input that then you can decide, well, which of those pieces of feedback and information am I going to use and take with me and do something with. Of course, there's always the opportunity, you know, there's always the chance that someone might just, you know, have a bit of a rant or a vent with you. But I think if you're going in with a purpose of wanting to improve, people understand that. And they, as a member of your team, if you create the space for them and it's nice and safe for them to share their thoughts on what would be helpful in terms of your leadership progression, then I think you're going to get some really great information. So just make it nice and easy and nice and safe for people to give you that feedback.
Alrighty, so aspiring first-time leaders, we've covered the skills you need to work on, tick, that you need to keep on learning and reflecting as you go, tick, and that getting feedback and using it to improve is key, tick. One final piece of the puzzle. What's the best way to get these skills as a first-time leader?
I think it's really important that you've got that social learning, so you are seeking out people who have those skills. It's that idea of, to be it, you need to see it. So I love seeking out effective leaders and being able to observe and watch them. And then it's just getting to apply it. You need to practice You need to win, you need to learn. So we don't say win and fail. We have this concept of you win or you learn. And the more learns you get under your belt, the better you'll get at being an effective leader.
Ah, so that's why I say I'm a lifetime learner then. Corina also teaches small business owners leadership skills. It's kind of like a mini MBA.
Absolutely. So that's really from a people perspective where they're defining what is the culture that they want to create, what's the strategy and the vision, how are they going to bring people along, what are the values that they want to define, the employee value proposition. So there's a lot of leadership skills in there. It's just stepping it up that to that strategic leadership level.
Formal MBAs are on offer at lots of universities and colleges, but they're expensive. Do you need to spend a lot of money to become a good leader? Dr. Stacey Ashley.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of learning available that really doesn't require anything except your time and attention and perhaps your energy and focus to implement what you learn. So I think there's a really big gap between I've been exposed to some new ideas and then I've taken those ideas and I've actually applied them. And so when people say I've done training or I've been following this podcast or something like that, but nothing really happened, well, did you take that information and do something with it? Because that's only the first part. Getting the information is the first part. Using it and applying it and then learning from what happens as you apply it, that's really where the learning takes place. And that's where your growth as a leader will take place.
And is that on me to go and apply the things that I'm learning in my day-to-day work as a leader?
The answer is yes. You know, you might talk to your leader about it and how they can help and support you as you apply these things, but the only person who is going to help you to become a better leader, who has an interest in you becoming a better leader, is you. So it's up to you.
And as you know, the management and leadership space, well, it's rather crowded. So Stacey, do you have any advice for if a person wants to assess, should I do this management or leadership training or course or read this or listen to this? How would they go about assessing things?
I'd go back to a couple of kind of core things. Does this support the way that I do my best learning? And if it does, great, let's explore further. But if it's really not your preferred way of learning and that sort of thing, it may not be the best first choice. Obviously, you want to understand, is it relevant? So how does this particular piece of training or this resource close the gap that I'm trying to close or elevate my learning in the space that I'm trying to focus on? So relevance is important. And then obviously you want to find out, you know, has it worked for other people? So obviously testimonials and feedback and what other outcomes have other people got? So you just want to do your, you know, sort of those almost sanity checks of does the program deliver or the resource deliver? Does it potentially support your objectives? Does it support the way you want to learn? Has it got evidence that actually it does deliver what it says? And if you wanted to take it further, depending on how extensive this was, if it was a big investment or a lot of time, you might want to talk to people who've actually done the program before and get their insight into what the experience was like and what they took away from it and how valuable it's been.
So don't just sign up for or buy a leadership tool unless it resonates with you. Corina has some final advice for first-time managers.
So as a first-time manager, it's really important that you back yourself and realise that if you're in a management role, someone believes in you, whether it's the people following you or the people who have put you into that role. So really trying to get that confidence around what are your strengths and focusing on those strengths. And then it's about getting that support crew and network around you as well so that you can be learning with them and learning from them. So whether that be external coaches, mentors, or just other leaders that you can learn from, and ensuring that you don't just put yourself in an echo chamber of people who think like you, leveraging diversity. So getting or seeking out people who think differently from you is a really important way that you can learn and progress.
I hope this has been helpful for you, aspiring first-time leaders, and also for those of you who might not have had the kind of leadership training you needed along the way. Thanks to Corina Calder, Head of Learning and Development at SW Accountants and Advisors, Professor Greg Harper, Executive Dean of Business at Torrens University, and Dr. Stacey Ashley, author of the new leader. Next time.
I have such a complicated relationship with the term work-life balance. I kind of hate the term.
What do you think about the concept of work-life balance? We explode the myth and look at some alternative ways to feel better about your life and your work. You've been listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, work it like a true leader.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.